The following Dharma talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City, Fire Lotus Temple. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery.
This is from the Mountains and Rivers Sutra by the 12th century Zen master Dogen. The mountains lack none of their proper virtues. Hence, they are constantly at rest and constantly walking. We must devote ourselves to a detailed study of this virtue of walking. The walking of the mountains is like that of people. Do not doubt that mountains walk simply because they may not appear to walk like humans. These words of the ancestor point out the fundamental meaning of walking, and we should thoroughly investigate his teaching on constant walking. Walking is movement, flow, flux, change. There is nothing that is not walking. We are always walking. When we are still sitting still on our cushion, we are walking like the mountain. Every change in the universe is ringing in our hearts when we are sitting there. Understand this about your life. Understand this about everyone's life. Understand this is about reality. Nothing is staying the same. Everything is flowing like walking, flowing like water. So I'm going to talk about walking as if we didn't know how to walk. We do and we don't. So some questions I often get asked is, what is Buddhism about? And how do I take what's happening on the cushion into my life? How do I walk this into my life? And a ritual I have for many years now is when I wake up, it doesn't matter how I feel, just I wake up, I put my hands into Gassho, and I say, I am grateful to be alive. And I pause. And then I recite the five remembrances. I am the nature to grow old. There's no way to escape or avoid old age. I am of the nature to grow ill. I cannot escape sickness. I will have ill health. I am of the nature to die. I cannot escape death. I will be separated from everything near and dear to me and everyone that I hold dear. Everyone I love is of the nature of change. We can't avoid being separated. My actions are my only true belongings. The only continuation is how I act, the ground on which I stand. I cannot escape the consequence of my actions. I bow, and then I might lay there for a while, pull the blind up. Just kind of make contact, stretch your little feetsies, just check in. Gears aren't really going yet. It's 4 a.m. or earlier. Then might put the hot water on and start another ritual. All day, just ritual and ceremony. All these five remembrances, may sound like really terrible news, kind of buzzkill after buzzkill, but they actually form and shape this basis of walking, how we're going to walk. It's always there, these truths. What's happening? That's what's happening. So when someone asks what Buddhism is about, I say, here, just this. This is the human project in an earth body. We can ignore the memo, disassociate, but it's the truths. And it puts everything into perspective for our walking, our nature. When Buddha offered these remembrances very early, he hoped to help people to let go of clinging and attachment and encourage us to instead to develop our innate wisdom and our compassion as we walk into our lives. He must have known this could take care of our fears, just to say, hey, this is what's happening. I'm the nature to grow old. I am the nature to become ill. I am the nature to die. I'll be separated from everything. And how I act now is what moves forward. He said bringing these basic truths to mind would far outweigh how uncomfortable they might make us feel. So we might squirm a bit hearing these. I did. I still do. Like, I still have to take them in, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. And let it inform my walking. So mindfulness is part of that. And I like these characters for mindfulness. There's two characters for the word mindfulness. One is shelter, or now. The shelter of now, where we live now. That's our shelter, where we live now. And the other character is heart. Heart. So bringing the heart and mind, body to the present condition now. And I like to say the characters for busyness is the character heart with the character killing over it. So busyness is killing the heart. And then one of my favorite Theravadan monastics, a forest monk, says, remember, aging is normal for me. Illness is normal. Death is normal. Yes, I will be separated from what I hold near and dear, and only what I have is how I act. These things are normal for everyone, no matter who and what we are, where we are. There's that story of the little boy who said to his mom, Mom, pretend you are surrounded by hungry tigers, all wanting to devour you. What would you do? If I could say it to one of you, you're surrounded by hungry tigers, what would you do? And she said, oh, I would be terrified. I wouldn't know what to do. What would you do? She says to him. And he says, I'd stop pretending. Puts everything into perspective, doesn't it? This is quite a project, this human being. Like, what? What is this organism that is moving and walking? And Dogen's always saying, we should thoroughly investigate this teaching on constant walking and investigate some more. Never ends. And so I found this lovely poem, too, by Wallace Stevens, which kind of resonated for me. He writes, I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw or heard or felt came not but from myself, and there I found myself more truly and more strange. Kind of like that. Like that. And then I received an email from somebody with a retreat idea. And mostly this person goes on our outings, our wilderness outings into the city. And it was on this artist you might know, Yuji Agematsu. And Yuji's work is, he's been in New York since 1980, came to do music, but what he does is works from his walking and things he finds on the sidewalk. And he repurposes it into mini sculpture assemblages within the cellophane. He takes a cigarette pack cellophanes, and his sculptures are all within the cellophane of the cigarette pack. They're amazing. And he does, they're called 365s. So every day of the year, he walks and he does an assemblage of things he finds in different neighborhoods. He'll walk in different places. And then he has a little notebook where he draws a little picture and he'll record the time of day, what he found. And I found a little video on him, but he says, in city life, we totally have to manage ourselves in a specific way, doing common things. On the other hand, there's a breakdown. That's why I always pay attention to being on time, because it allows me to be in time. We can't be totally crazy. Artists have to be cool of mind. We have to be on a tightrope. Remember, we are impermanent. Yes, it's very hard to settle. Sometimes I'm very confused about how to settle. And that's why I need to be totally alone with information cut out. No iPhone. Just feeling atmosphere and temperature, hearing the noise of the street, paying attention to the mimicry of the object. All kinds of ordinary, very anonymous situations have always inspired me to find another way to be, to create. And each block is different from other blocks. We have to break down connotation. Similarity and differentiality are what make me move. So, he says, walking is really interesting because it's a switch between conscious and subconscious. Zoning out, pointing out, zoning out, focusing in. Spontaneously encountering objects. Trash is a mirror. And I watched this video of him, and he has this little spatula, and he scraped up a lollipop that got all like melted and mashed on the sidewalk, and he was holding it like, isn't this beautiful? Like how did, like he was looking at the process of how it was all mashed and melted, and he wouldn't see this if he wasn't like walking and paying attention in his walk, and that he could see such beauty in this archive of humanity. And yeah, his pieces are lined up on these nice little shelves, and inside is like everything. I mean, you just have to look in there. And he uses a chopstick, and he has some other implement, and he arranges them in there. Some things stick out. It's quite fascinating. Check out Yuji. Anyway, I was happy to be handed this walker's creativity. So I was thinking about Kinhin, the walking meditation, this exquisite transition of getting up and walking into our life, out of the seated meditation. And we often hear, can we just walk? This word just is really used a lot in Zen. Just. What is just? It's a fascinating word. Just sit. Shikantaza. Just sitting. Just being the breath. Just counting. Just this. Just this is it. So just as an adverb can mean only or exactly, exactly. Just this. Exactly this. As it is. So to just walk, just as it is, just walking. I remember in beginning instruction, I was told, Kinhin is not a break. It's not like you're sitting there and all of a sudden, ching, ching, thank God. You might feel that way, and it's just like, okay, like, and you're already before that, I'm going to get a drink, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to check my phone, hopefully not. But I like how they say it's a exquisite transition to moving into life and staying steady and still. We know how to walk, and often we walk and talk to ourselves, busy ourselves with thoughts. That's why it's a practice in this particular context. And we see how difficult it is, as my teacher would say, to do what we're doing as we're doing it. So, sitting in silence, we practice stopping, but things are moving. Our blood is circulating, our breath is, we're not completely still, and we're coming into alignment, synchronizing body, heart, mind, strengthening our stability, putting our mind in our hara, the lower part of our body, and resting there. And so developing this this concentration, which is the ability to put our mind where we want it and to have it there for as long as we need it to be there. This is critical in this process, right? We don't know when we'll have to keep our mind somewhere for a while. And we need the strength for that, because it can just do all kinds of havoc when we just need to be just what we're doing. So, walking as a practitioner, we're embodied in our movement. And Buddha gives us four postures. If we can't walk, there's seated, walking, standing, and lying down. So this sense of separation is really important to look at. What exactly do I mean when I say myself feels separated, or there's something apart from something? And Buddha presented that this sense of separateness is related to our belief in a separate self, that we're apart from what we're doing, and it's deeply rooted and we don't really question it. So what do I exactly mean? What do you exactly mean when you say myself? Lama Willa writes, when you look deeply into it, the self is not always easy to find as you might think. At first blush, you might notice a sense of I that exists in this present moment. This sense of self is like a feeling that you exist. But then there is also a complex and multifaceted sense of identity. There's your name, your job, your relationships, your thoughts, your ideas and opinions, our body. This all seems to be a part of the self. On the most basic level, there seems to be a consciousness that knows and sees. There is a sense of I and me. But the more that we examine this, the more it falls apart. In one of the teachings, the Buddha compared the self to a chariot. A chariot functions, but if you look closely, there's no one thing that is a chariot. It's made up of all these wheel, axle, wood boards and all that. It's parts. In the same way, there's no single entity that is the self. It too is made up of lots of parts. So when the Buddha taught selflessness, which is unique in religion, anatman, selflessness, he didn't mean there's no self at all. You see me. Something's here. You're there. It's really important to understand this, because if we decide there's no self, we risk denigrating what is present, and much is present. He meant that the self is not all that of what we think. He meant that the self does not exist as one single thing, and it does not exist in isolation. Something exists, but that something is a construction. It's a fiber in the web of all of life. We speak of the diamond net of Indra. The self is interwoven with its world, with worlds seen and unseen. Every breath we take is an exhale from the trees around us. When we consider deeply, separateness is an illusion. But the illusion of separateness is a powerful one. It keeps us operating on a level of self-interest, and also it causes suffering. The sense of separateness feeds loneliness, fear, aversion, and grasping. It is not an illusion that generally serves us well. So Thich Nhat Hanh uses this interbeing word. He's a Zen teacher in the tradition. The truth that nothing stands alone, that everything interweaves with everything else. Everything inter-is. Interbeing can be seen when we slow down enough to observe any part of our human experience. The body demonstrates inner being with every breath. With every inhale, we take the out-breath of trees in our bodies. With every exhale, part of us joins the earth. We cannot live for a single moment without the constant exchange between our bodies and the natural world. And, you know, there's a lot going on with plant world that teaches us about this connection, this highway of threads and interconnectedness. And in the Blue Cliff Record, the Hermit of the Lotus Peak, case 25, where the hermit holds up his staff, in the pointer it says, if you stick to a fixed position, you fall into a poison sea. A fixed position, what does that mean? A physical or a conceptual fixed position, right? So walking meditation can teach us to move along without losing our mind and losing our balance. It teaches us how to ground our awareness with each step that we take, one small step. It's a medicine. We could think of it as that heals the split we experience from the world as we touch the earth and connect with it and be deeply connected. So it's no small thing to stand up and walk. So this word kinhin, this is all like, I found some juicy little bits. You might get bored, but I found it very exciting. And the origins of kinhin, like you think like you're doing this thing, but it's like, where did it come from? Who said we're going to sit and get up and walk and sit and get up and walk? Like, where does that come from? So kin is translated as to walk through or pass through in time and space. That's the kin of kinhin. And hin, oh, it also refers to the warps on a loom or a cloth that go vertical and up and down. So that's kin. And hin means to go or to practice or stitch together. Walking as if threaded through a loom. So that's what we look like, right? All of us lined up, we're like stitches. It's also called a walking sutra. So shikantaza is this practice of just sitting. And this is exactly the up and down movement of kinhin, shikantaza. It's the same threading, up and down movement. With no gaining mind, threaded up, threaded across. We're not trying to reach some destination, threaded up and down like a cloth. And to feel a step when taking a step. To take a step, take a complete step, and walking with royalty, with the dignity of a Buddha, with nobility. I talked last week about reclaiming royal ease. We need to reclaim our royal ease. We got so shook up. We get the sense of correct walking and deportment from this term, kinhin. It's as if, one teacher said, we are standing still, but we are actually moving as a participant in relationship, because we're with a group. So this was in, and to feel this royalty, I mean, not in an egoic way, but just we're noble beings. To honor that we're every being walking on this earth is a noble being. I'm not talking about how they act. I'm talking about their original nature. That changes over time. So in there's a book of Dogen's journals when he met his teacher in China, Ru Jing. We chanted their name, Hokyoki. And in it, Dogen writes, the slow walk consists of one half step per breath. So we inhale, we exhale, take a half step. You inhale, exhale, take a half a step. Take a step without bending over or looking up. Viewed from the side, it would seem that you are standing in one spot. And so I was like, okay, what's the origins of Kinhin? And so I found it, but I'll try not to get in too much detail. You can go look at yourself. This is from Isha Fujita. And he's a contemporary teacher. I met him years ago. But he says, you might imagine Dogen doing everything in the Zendo that we do today and assume he is the source of all elements of our practice. After all, he wrote all these instructions, Fukan Zazengi, how to sit, the Shingi, how to comport yourself in residency or in practice, how we act with each other, these codes, Doshinji code, Kurenji code. He says, when it comes to Kinhin, however, what we do was fabricated in the late 1700s as part of a reformation project. So government was involved in like how people were practicing their Buddhist practice. And so this is what happened. It says, walking is mentioned in the Pali Canon as one of the four postures of the Buddha and his disciples. As a practice, focuses on correct walking demeanor rather than a particular form. How are we walking while we're walking? Walking was done in various places, right? The Buddha walked outside mostly. But there's no description of Kinhin as we know it in the standard texts. Certainly not the style of slow Kinhin that we use today. So Dogen spends plenty of time writing about Zazen, but he doesn't focus on Kinhin. What's up? So we don't really know what that looked like for him. But then there's a monk named Meizan Zuiho. This is in 1683. So Dogen is 1200 to 1253. And this is in 1683. And he pieced together some instructions about bits of writing attributed to Dogen and tried to show the connection with two known, well-known sutras to legitimize Kinhin. So intense. Meizan was a reformer who wanted to root out practices and doctrines that crept into Soto Zen, but that he considered not to be Dogen's teachings, right? So the reform movement started in 1700 before Meizan became involved. And then government gets involved. In 1615, you with me here? A little more history. The government ruled that Soto Zen had to follow the house rules of Eiheiji, which is a major Buddhist temple, because it was the denomination's head temple, and there were similar guidelines for other Buddhist sects. However, Eiheiji didn't have a written set of house rules. So reformers said that the entirety of Dogen's writings should be taken as the house rules. Dogen's writings were just becoming widely available at that time. His writings and life story had previously been unread for centuries. So there is this, he has this profound literature, some of the most profound writing. It was hidden for like 400 years, unread. And then it was brought out. Reformers went all over his writings in order to find examples how current practices had deviated from them. Those practices at AHG said that their way was right because they were directly descended from Dogen, and they were the protectors of his temple and practice. Thus, the conflict became texts versus practice, which was authentic. The government supported the texts as authoritative over heavy opposition from many leaders of the Soto school. I find this fascinating. Once this happened, anytime there was a disagreement, both sides turned to Dogen's texts for support for their arguments, which made the texts the ultimate source. Authority no longer rested in face-to-face transmission of practice from teacher to student, but from interpretations of texts. Meizan became a leading figure in the reform movement, particularly related to the monastic practice. He wanted to take practice back to what he considered the old true Chinese way that Dogen learned when he went to China and practiced with Ru Jing. One thing he wanted to change was the practice of walking while reciting the Buddha's name, which he saw as not being legitimate practice. So there isn't much in Dogen's writings about Kinhin, so the house rules didn't help. So he started to look elsewhere for clues. And he went back to Indian and Chinese sources to write Kinhin Ikki, a short text describing Kinhin that connects it to mainstream Buddhist texts and includes his own explanations as comments. We're talking about how to walk. All of this. Meizan had to do two things in his text: gather up descriptions and instructions for doing Kinhin, and quote sutras and other texts that gave those instructions the weight of authority. Amazing. Early texts describe shashu, the way we make our left hand makes a fist, right hand covers it gently, shashu, this mudra, and the mental attitude, as well as walking neither fast nor slow in a straight line and then turning around and coming back. Yet the texts on monastic rules that were available to Dogen when he was training simply instruct practitioners to walk in an appropriate way for a temple, and if desired, to walk inside or under the eaves in free time. In Bendoha, there's something that sounds like slow Kinhin in entering and leaving the Zendo hall, but not as something done between Zazen periods. The hands are clasped together inside the sleeves, and there's nothing matching about breathing to steps. Ru Jing said, he's the only one who knows this practice of Kinhin. Again, there's nothing about timing, when and for how long to walk, or Kinhin's role as a practice. Despite this, Meizan's Kinhiki argues that Kinhin is as an old and orthodox practice of the Buddha himself. Ru Jing somehow preserved this neglected practice and taught it to Dogen, and that by putting together the old texts that have instructions, Meizan restored the true ritual Kinhin practice of the Buddhas and ancestors. We're doing it. So that's the origins of Kinhin. So let's walk it through. The bell rings to end the period. And as we start to begin to change the posture of and going into standing up, you rock gently. So you can notice if, like, you hear that ching ching and you just pop. So don't come out so fast. This is the exquisite transition. Rock gently. Release your sitting practice. So release counting. Release whatever koan you were working on. And just feel yourself. That's where the just is. Just standing. Just get up into your life. We stand up and then we take care. You take care of your little zafu or the chair, what you were sitting on. You straighten it. Really be present with the richness of detail in each of these moments. That's the just. That's where our life is. But we're want to get ahead so fast. So this is what it's working on. It's a subtle practice. We stand, we feel the knees lift from the floor, and when we feel the heels touch, we feel the hip bone rotate, the hip and the torso straightens. I had to do this up in my room. And we feel the shoulders fall back down and back as we lift the hands to the Shashumudra. We bow to our seat and then turn. The hands are at the solar plexus. We feel the heels touch. Oh, the thumb tucks in and the left hand covers it loosely. Shoulders are relaxed down and the back. And the elbows are gently away from the sides. And then we feel how breathing moves in the rib cage, fans in and out as we breathe. We're amazing. Like this whole architecture that we can get into and being present. We feel the neck that delicately support, straighten to support. Pull the chin back. Feel the alignment of the ears aligned over and the nose lined over the navel. So we're not walking like the thinker. You know, if you do Alexander technique, we have to walk. And she stops people when I had this class because stop and you'd see people's heads like way out ahead of their bodies onto the next thing, right? So to really come into alignment with where we are. Notice the knee joint bending, space around the bones as we feel the breath rising and falling. A foot steps forward. The air rushes between the toes. If you have bare feet, as we feel contact of our heel and the floor, the feet contacting the ground. That really helps us in our nervous system to feel the ground, get grounded, and a gentle shift of our balance starts happening. And then we start walking without walking. We're just walking. As Kazan said in his instructions, walk without walking, silent and moving. Almost looks like you're just standing up straight in stillness. One teacher said, it's like the walking of a hollow reed. And then we just walk. When we take a complete step, we're stepping directly into the wisdom of our Buddha nature. A complete step that we're in, revealing ourselves as Buddha. Experience the dignity of awake awareness, the dignity of our life, and just that step. Stepping forth in Kinhin. So soon we're going to step out onto State Street and on into the world. Remember, walking is movement. Flow, flux, change. There's nothing that is not walking. We're always walking. Everything is walking. When we are sitting still on our cushion, we are sitting there. Nothing is staying the same. Everything is walking, flowing like water, balanced, breathing, seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling, walking without walking. As the Buddha said, the whole world is awakened then. My actions are my only true belongings, the only continuation, the ground on which I stand. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. Everyone and everything is here in the center of our heart in this present moment of being alive. So, how will we walk this together? How are we walking this together? We can pay more attention, that mindfulness, to our walking, to our steps, to our being present. That's how it moves into our life. That's how it moves into our wanting, our not wanting, our sadness. All of it. I was the world in which I walked, and what I saw or heard or felt came not by but from myself. And there I found myself more truly and more strange. I realized this morning in the identity of relative and absolute, we say, within light there is darkness, but do not try to understand that darkness. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Light and darkness are a pair, inseparable, like the foot before and the foot behind in walking. Reading words, you should grasp the great reality. Do not judge by any standards. Don't judge by any standards. Not so easy. If you do not see the way, you do not see it even as you walk on it. When you walk the way, it is not near. It is not far. If you are deluded, you are mountains and rivers away from it. I respectfully say to those who wish to be enlightened, do not waste your time by night or day. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, or to make a donation, please visit our website, zcnyc.org.